Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host Richie Billing, and today we're continuing on with our mini-series on magic systems. Janina and Lucy from the Faith Fellows podcast are back again, and we'll be chatting about two big examples of magic systems, their origins, and how they've evolved over time. We also take a look at some key bits of advice for making your own magic system too. Last episode on hard and soft magic systems went down very well indeed. And if you listen to that, thank you very much. But if you haven't, you can rack that one up to listen to right after this. Before we crack on, just a very quick reminder to subscribe or follow the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. They're coming thick and fast, and we've got some brilliant guests in the pipeline. I'm sure you're not going to want to miss them. If you enjoy the show and would like us to do even more episodes, maybe even more regularly, then give this episode a share on social media or tell anyone who you think may be interested in it. If you're listening on the Spotify mobile app, a quick rating goes a very long way, as does a review on iTunes. It essentially helps people find us and can help them make up their mind when it comes to taking a chance on us. Lastly, if you want to get involved in our growing writing community, then check out the link in the description. We have a fantastic new feature called Panels, which is launching on the 7th of May. Once per month, we'll host a panel discussion in our Discord server, inviting a very special guest to help us answer all of your questions on a specific subject. For May's edition, we're delighted to welcome best-selling fantasy author and guest on the show, Stephen Orion, who's stopping by to answer all of your questions on world building. Stephen's got a brilliant new book coming out in July. The world is absolutely fascinating, and the reviews have been incredible so far. So if you've got any questions about building a fantasy world and want to ask one of the world's top authors, this is your chance. All you have to do is join our Discord community. The link to do that is in the description. All you have to do is join our community, and you do that through Patreon. Now it's time to get on with today's show. And here's Janina and Lucy for part two of our series on magic systems. I'm delighted to welcome back to the tool shed Janina and Lucy from the Faith Fellows podcast. How's it going?
I'm good. Yeah.
Last time we were chatting all about hard and soft magic systems, I think we gave a pretty good insight into what they are. I don't know about you two. I thought it was pretty comprehensive. But we're going to dive even deeper today. I'm going to look at a couple of specific examples and then look at ways that you can use to create your own magic system. So, Lucy, witchcraft expert, currently doing a PhD, aren't you, on all things witchcraft? I think it's such an interesting area of magic, and it sort of transcends reality and fiction, doesn't it? So what can you tell us about it and how it is sort of filtered into the fantasy genre?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think I knew when I started, like when I went into this, how absolutely bizarre some of the things in this, like in these types of writing would be. Mostly my research focuses on modern depictions of witchcraft in historical fiction. But in doing that and researching that, I've had to read a bunch of early modern demonological books. And the things that people genuinely believed about magic and witchcraft are incredible. Like, you couldn't possibly imagine. I was reading a chapter in the Malus Malificarum the other day where he was talking about archer witches. And he was saying basically these archer witches have the possibility to kill someone by shooting. So they shoot an arrow, a bow and arrow, and they magically infuse the arrow so that it hits someone wherever they are, regardless of if they're hiding, if they're miles away, if they're countries away, it will always hit the target because of the magic. Which, in a fantasy novel, makes sense. But for a person talking about actual life, is outlandish. Crazy.
I know. And sort of, how did it sort of begin then? If we go back to sort of the origins of witchcraft.
Yeah, so that's quite hard to say. It's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. where we don't entirely know whether witchcraft was kind of a religious thing first or a folkloric thing first, because of the kind of predating of writing and stuff. But actually witchcraft, the first mentions of witchcraft, I believe, are in the Mesopotamian era. So they're like way, way, way back.
Yeah.
We've always had witches, you know, Greek society, they have witchcraft, ancient Rome, they have witchcraft. We've always had them. In the medieval period and then in the early modern period, when things got a little bit more Christian, it started to become a genuine worry and a genuine fear for people. And that's when you get demonological texts that are on like how to recognize a witch, how to get rid of a witch, how to protect yourself from witchcraft and that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's quite interesting. Obviously, the tolerance for witches has decreased over time. What was it like back in a more sort of tolerant period? Was it more widespread and trusted?
Yeah, I mean, it would not have been uncommon in medieval Europe to have had, you know, two or three wise women to a village who would sell you charms or who would sell you potions. That's a really common occurrence. And even, to be honest, when the witch trials are happening in the early modern period, that kind of stuff is still happening. It just has to go a little bit, you know, under the table and a little bit more quietly.
Oh, it is really interesting. I suppose I always sort of think of like healers as well when you think of like witches and like mystics and them kind of figures in that's the kind of what they're portrayed as in fantasy books anyway for me. And like you need to go and see the old mystic woman at the edge of town, and she's a bit crazy, so be careful.
Yeah, and that's reflected in both in folklore and in history. We see those figures of people who kept a little hut on the edge of the woods and sold, you know, charms and love potions and poppets to people.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, just that sort of being placed outside of society makes it, that sort of gives it, I don't know, it makes it almost like a taboo thing, doesn't it? It's like, it's not part of who we are, but we tolerate it.
Yeah. And a lot of the demonological texts, what they're grappling with is not that the witches have a power. They don't care about the fact that the witches have a power. It's that they have a power that is not controlled by them or by God. So it has a really feminine history, witchcraft. It's kind of like a power that exists outside of the patriarchy. And that is what's dangerous about it. It's that idea that women have this power that the men in charge really can't control.
That's really cool. I like that angle. Yeah, it explains a lot as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
The witch trials and everything.
Yeah.
So what was the sort of the lines given for justifying that?
Most of the time, witches were said to have had, you know, a sexual pact with the devil, be in league with the devil, and so anyone who's in league with the devil should be exterminated. And there's no further justification to it than that. Really, that they are pure evil in the eyes of the witch hunters. So it's, you know, a logical decision to make.
And it's just a narrative that was fed to people and then stirred them up.
Yeah, absolutely was. Yeah,
like Brexit.
Just like Brexit. Exactly.
Yeah. That famous kind of dark magic.
Yeah. I've been reading the book about Cambridge Analytica. It's absolutely brilliant. It's called Mindfuck by Christopher Wiley. Never really do book recommendations on this, but yeah, check it out, because it shows how private companies like harvested and used people's data to just feed them narratives that began to change or stir like emotions up within them. And then, yeah, scary, very scary stuff. Anyway, back to witchcraft. I mean, have you got any examples of like stories involving witches?
I'm trying to think of ones that would be appropriate to say in this context, because some of them are quite, most of them are quite violent, but it, particularly in the
Malice. A violent one, if you like.
particularly in the Malice Malice Carum, they're like oddly, like almost pornographic in some ways. They're like really awfully sexual in the worst ways.
What, like a dominatrix kind of thing?
No, well, yes, sometimes. And sometimes, like, there's a lot of talk of men getting cursed penises. That's Like, that's standard in the Mars. Literally, there's like 10 chapters about that. But also, women like.
Cursed penis?
Who knows?
What kind of curses?
Well, so like, curses of like impotence and also of like just their penis disappears one day and they just don't have one anymore. That's another one that's mentioned quite a lot. And then the one that I think is the most like bizarre, that like, you have to have taken like a bizarre leap of logic, is that women, I don't know if it's like cut off, which is cut off the penis of men, or like somehow magically steal it and then keep them in birds' nests in their house.
Ah, it's what?
Birds' nests or cabinets just have a collection of animated penises. It's bizarre. Yeah. Truly bizarre stuff.
So. There you go. That's plenty of inspiration for people listening at home.
Probably not the most useful stories.
Yeah.
I mean, it just tells you what people will believe, you know?
Yeah. Fantasy romance is all the rage at the moment, so there you go.
True.
Some penis curses. So what about Dungeons and Dragons? Because that is absolutely huge, and it's been going on for decades, hasn't it? So magic has played a huge part since day one. I'm guessing it's evolved, has it, in that time, or is it stayed quite rigid?
Well, it's sort of, there are obviously different worlds within Dungeons and Dragons. So there are, you know, you can do your classic, you know, the races and the classes that it all started out with, and they will still have similar spells. I mean, there's different editions again and all that. And then there will be some, like, well, in some editions, there will be some overpowered, you know, classes that can use magic in a way that they shouldn't be able to. But again, back to, like, limitations and stuff, I guess, with it being a game, it, you know, that's, I think that can be quite helpful for writing as well. Like, if in a game it would make other players angry, you might not want to enable your character to be able to do that sort of thing in your story. But like, we're also playing in a campaign at the minute set in the Dark Sun universe, where magic has sort of, well, it's all pretty much like an inversion of your classic fantasy world. So there's it's all a desert, and like magic has been used so much that there is very little magic left now in that world, and it's destroyed a lot of the surrounding like nature and stuff. So you can use in that, you can use, there's different sources for magic, but you can defile, for example, which means you pull magic and like energy out of the nature around you. And then basically you kill both the you know, the plants that you're pulling the energy out of, but also you make that patch of land completely infertile. So like magic has like disastrous consequences, and therefore magic in that world is forbidden in most places, because people are like, oh, well, this destroyed our world. We can't keep using this. It'll destroy more of our world. So that's a really interesting world to play in, really.
Yeah, I love the sound of that. Complete opposite to like what you'd usually expect from a fantasy world, but it's that cost and cause and effect kind of thing, isn't it, that we discussed in the last episode. And so can someone steal the sort of energy from another person?
Oh, I don't think
well, you've never tried.
It's probably possible. No, I'm thinking about it.
Although, I mean, it wasn't, and yeah, I think it is, because that's what Kallak was doing, right?
Yeah, true. Dogs. The evil overlord who was trying to turn himself into a dragon.
Oh, nice. What was he trying to absorb the soul of a dragon?
Well, no, he was trying to, like, I think he was trying to absorb the soul of people to turn himself into a dragon, right?
Ah, nice.
Yeah, that's typical.
Yeah.
I like that, though. It's really cool. And sounds like there's a lot of different worlds then in Dungeons & Dragons. So can you give us some examples of other ones?
I've been watching Dimension 20 this week, which is like just another show like Critical Role. He's playing at the moment in a kind of fairy tale clashed together world. So they've got all of the big like fairy tale books and fairy tale collections kind of smudged together. So you've got I think it's called the Lullaby Lands, which is, you know, they've got the classic, like, Miss Muffet and all of that stuff. And then they've got the Never After, which is, like, the princes, the princesses, all the Disney stuff. And then 1001 Nights with Shahrazad and Aladdin and Sinbad and the Sailors. So that's quite a fun, it's kind of a fun thing to see them, like, do fairy tales in a high fantasy sort of a setting. That's another one that I've been...
No, it's interesting. Yeah. It sort of appeals to a wider group of people then. Are there any other interesting sort of costs to magic then that you've come across in Dungeons & Dragons?
Well, sort of apart from defiling, like I'm playing a wizard in that Dark Sun setting at the minute. And so what I can't do is just cast a spell to get me out of there because people will hunt me down if they find that out. So I have to cast my magic in secret.
Interesting.
So that's one thing. It's that's a big limitation on what I can do. Also, my party members don't like me defiling. So, you know, I'm limited in my power there also. And most people can't read in that world. So if I, as a wizard who can read, reveal that I am able to read and I'm not nobility, which incidentally I became in a very weird story, but like, you know, it wasn't designed like that. I you know, my character wasn't like noble from birth. Then that's a big problem as well. Like, so you need to cover your tracks very well, if you know what I mean. So I had from the start, my whole spell book. You need a spell book as a wizard in Dungeons and Dragons. So it's limited in which spells you've learned as well. Like, you can't just cast any spell. You have to copy spells over into your spell book. And it's not like, you know, you're given a full spell book and then you can just, you know, as long as you find the right page, you can cast it. Not at all. You've got a set of spells that you've copied into it yourself and you learn some along the way. And that's... You know, that thing for me was in my apron. I was wearing a large leather apron with lots of pockets with herbs growing in them. And they were sort of covering up the little bits of writing on the inside of the leather pockets. So no one's taken it off me yet.
Nice. There you go.
For that sort of thing, you have to be very creative with it. Which is, like you say, like if you've got conflict, if you've got limitations that cause conflict and that put you in trouble, basically, then the more creative you have to be with how you're going to use it. And then also, I feel like the more it pays off when you are able to.
Yeah, I think computer games are quite good at showing that kind of side of things, aren't they? Like, I always played Skyrim, and magic is obviously you can learn all different kinds of spells, and you've obviously sort of bar and your magic regenerates over time, but you can only cast so much. So obviously the more skills you are, the more magic you can cast, but there is a limit to it, and you've got to wait and recharge it, or you can drink potions and stuff like that to sort of boost it. So I just think the limitations you see in computer games are quite interesting. And then in Skyrim as well, like, you sort of get a superpower that you like you charge up. You see it in quite a lot of games, things like that. Like, even sort of, I would say, sci-fi games like Destiny. Like, you have sort of abilities and supers, they're actually called, so like superpowers that you charge up, and they're almost like magic. I don't know. It's a bit of a weird crossover between like science and fantasy. And...
No, I think it makes total sense because, yeah. Like, yeah, you know, soft magic is essentially, you know, the dichotomy between soft and hard magic is exactly the same, really, as you know, soft and hard sci-fi, really.
Yeah.
Just the technology is what the magic is. But really, like, if you imagine, well, actually, this is quite an interesting point. So I grew up with a lovely 60s comedy series called Cat Weasel. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but it's an 11th century wizard who is transported because he's a bit of a bad wizard. He doesn't really know what he's doing, actually, and he casts the wrong spell when he's trying to flee from the Normans, and he lands in 1960s England, And like he lands on a farm and stuff, and he's terrified of all the electricery, as he calls it, around himself. So to him, that's magic.
Yeah.
And like he thinks, for example, that he has to do a certain like hand movement for the light bulb to come on, like in addition to switching, you know, to using the switch for it. So it's like it's very sweet in that, like, and then there's this boy who takes care of him and who obviously like makes sure that he isn't, you know, taken away by anyone. And he's then the one who has to explain everything about electricity because he knows what's going on. So for, in that sense, it's a hard sci-fi system because the technology is explained. But it somewhat remains a softer magic system because the wizard doesn't know what he's doing. But like that's, I think, you know, if you imagine that sort of thing happening, that like people in the ancient world come across electronic devices, that would be magic for them. Like having a smartphone that has like all the information at the touch of a button, really, that you can say that's magic to an extent to people who do not understand it, who weren't able to use that before. So I think that makes total sense, and that's why like the two genres like have such interconnected fandoms and go so well together.
Yeah, nice. So what do you think about creating your own magic system? Got any advice to share on this? Anyone want to go first?
I was waiting for you neither to do it because I know you're thinking of creating your own magic system right now. But
yeah, I mean, I think so. I read a lot of like creative writing books about making magic systems because that was like one of the biggest problems in my novel to solve, because I knew that it was, in a weird way, like not like the main point of the story. Like it's not all about casting spells all the time at all, but it's sort of key to the mystery that's solved at the end. And I didn't want it to be Deus Ex Machina, so I was like, I'd better get the magic system somewhat set up. And in my instance, the sidekick is the one who's got the magical abilities rather than the protagonist, who's a dragon. But I think the main sort of points that I found in all those books was A, the limitations that we've already talked about. It's important for like any payoff in a story that there's, you know, payment in advance, be that, you know, sacrifices of some kind, of like, you know, resources, strength or skill is another thing. Or, for example, that it's risky. Like, I read about one magic system where if you pronounce the spell in any way wrong at all, if you make any mistake in a lengthy spell, then, like, you know, you get cursed or you go mad or whatever, like something really bad happens to you. So in that instance, like, if you do it all correctly, there is no sacrifice, but you, like, you put yourself at risk. So that's another really interesting way of doing it. And I think it's just always answering the big question: if we have magic, why do we not have everything we want? And as long as you can answer that, then you have the ability to also make room for the things that magic can do that we can't do in real life.
Yeah, I like defining the limitations, isn't it? So what cost does it have and how it can be used and in what ways? I think that way you can sort of, even though you may not reveal that in your story and you keep it more mysterious, as long as you understand that, then you're not going to get too disjointed, are you?
Yeah, exactly. And even if you have a soft magic system, if you know what's going on, then that stops you from just like using it randomly or inconsistently. So that's really important.
What about you, Lucy?
I think also, even especially if you have a hard magic system, but even if you have a soft one, deciding who believes what about your magic can be really useful. That's one of the most useful things I've found from reading all of these nonsensical old demonology books. It's seeing how different people's beliefs are on the same issue. You know, people will, ghosts, for example, is something that people will argue a million in this time, a million different things about. Where does the ghost come from? Is it really a soul? Because shouldn't souls go to God and all of that kind of stuff? Having different beliefs around magic in your system can help you, one, feel like it's a more rich, more real sort of realistic system for your reader, but also if you want to explain your magic system, it makes more sense to have someone who doesn't understand, because otherwise why is it being explained? Yeah. So to have someone who doesn't have the system have it explained to them lets your reader find out about it too, rather than people who know everything about it just talking to each other about it, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's just more, well, more natural like that way, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. I suppose you do see in a lot of fantasy stories that character who's got the abilities, who may have used or shown some glimpses of it. I think we saw it in the Witcher series with, I can't remember her name now, the character.
Ciri,
yeah. We see little glimpses of it, don't we? And she doesn't quite know how to handle it. So I think that's a really good idea to take, especially with characters.
Yeah.
I like the finding conflict in your magic as well. So, like, obviously we talked about limitations, but the knock-on effects that magic can have. So, Yanina, that example you gave before of the destroying the planet, essentially. Yeah. It's makes such a difference to the way it can be used, doesn't it? So, there's going to be, like, elements of morality and limitations on how, if there's nothing left to use it with, like, and then you're sort of looking beyond that then to how magic evolves and how users of magic evolve.
Yeah.
So whether they would like start finding alternative sources, I don't know. It's interesting to, when you start asking what if, you can go on all kinds of mad adventures in your mind.
That's been a fun world to play around in. I'm not playing a magical character, but even so, I'm having fun with the magic of it.
So if you're looking for inspiration for what sort of a magic system you want to use, obviously there's plenty out there. But like, it's, you know, what's interesting to look at is A, like historical sources like Lucy's looking at the minute. And then there's always what you can find in folklore. There's actual like belief systems. And religion, like a lot of magic systems come from faith as well. And like from mythology. So you can educate yourself at the same time as like finding some inspiration for what you want to do. An existing like historical and religious beliefs, as well as it's probably like a good idea to look at what you grew up with and how you understood it, and like the, you know, the books and the films and the games that you grew up with, to see what kind of magic systems they used and why you liked or didn't like them.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing can be very helpful. And then obviously there's, you know, the different kinds of magic systems. If you do spells, if you do elemental magic, if you, you know, if you've got something really outlandish, if you've got something connected to the other world, the Fae, something like really arbitrary in that sense, something unpredictable. Have you got something that is trying to mimic science in a way? Because you can obviously do that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of ways of playing around with that, and there's so many stories out there that you can just have a look at and see if that's something that would fit into your world, really.
Nice. Yeah, great advice there. And I always think if you get really stuck, there's loads of prompts that you can find online that might just sort of get the wheels turning in your mind.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a fascinating chat. Lots of good examples and hopefully some good advice for people listening at home on how to make their own magic system. How can we find out a bit more about you guys and the Fae Fellows podcast?
Yeah, so our podcast is everywhere. that you normally would find podcasts. So, for example, on Spotify. And yeah, we're Faye Fellows Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and Faye Fellows on Twitter. So feel free to drop us a message and let us know if there's any topics that you'd be interested in us talking about. And yeah, love to hear from you.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you very much for taking all your time to chat about all things magic. Last two episodes, it's been really interesting. I've learned loads. I'm not a big user of magic, so it's been quite illuminating for me. And I hope everyone listening at home enjoyed it as well. Thanks very much, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much again, Lucy and Yanina, for giving up your valuable time to chat with us all about magic. I hope listening at home, you've learned something new. Witchcraft is a very interesting subject. Dungeons and Dragons, I am loving it at the moment. Film is awesome, and it's just brilliant how in-depth and creative it is. And hopefully, looking at some of them examples there, has given you inspiration for your own magic systems. If you enjoyed today's episode and don't want to miss any more in the future, be sure to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you really enjoyed today's episode, a quick rating on the Spotify mobile app or a review on iTunes goes a hell of a long way. Not only does it confirm that we're doing something right, but it helps other people find the show too, which is very important. And you can also help us do that by sharing this episode on social media or telling anyone who you think may be interested. Don't forget, we've got on the 7th of May the launch of our brand new feature, Panels. And this is a Discord community only feature. You can join that community via the Patreon link in the description. And on the 7th of May, we're hosting a panel made up of myself and a few brilliant writers from our community and a very special guest, Stephen Orion. So you don't want to miss it. We're going to be talking all about world building, and it's your chance to ask burning questions you have about creating worlds to one of the best writers around at the moment. So to find out more, just click the Patreon link in the description. And that's all for today. We'll be back on the 14th of May with a brand new episode. And until then, keep on scribbling.